fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is pleased to welcome our new sponsor, Insight Fire Training LLC, your provider for the best fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partner, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, and our new promotional partner, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5 Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. We hope you're all well, and we have a great podcast for you today. I want to remind you that you can find this podcast and our entire library on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv. You can also find us on most of the podcast streaming services like iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, etc. Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. If you listen to us via iTunes, please help us out by giving us a rating, and that will help others find us more quickly when they can look for us as well. And if you'd like to share your interest about our podcast with your friends and family, don't forget to go to our storefront with our friends from Teespring and head over to bit.ly/DalMatStore, with a capital D as in Dalmatian and S's and Sam, and choose from several t-shirts or mugs. And remember, a portion of the net proceeds goes to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And thanks to you folks buying those t-shirts, I'll be able to make a $50 donation this coming week to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Our guest today is Chief Victor Conley from Irving, Texas. And we didn't know each other, but I came across Chief Conley through a posting in Firehouse Magazine about a new program they began about blocking. And we know what blocking is. We know it's not done enough. And most of us know why it has to be done. But Chief Conley and his department came together to create a new program that will help them save lives of firefighters, of EMS workers, of recovery workers, and hopefully even other drivers on active roadways when there's an emergency that's happens there. Chief Conley supervises and regulates and manages the fire department in Irving, has control of all 379 personnel and the activities, including fire prevention, fire suppression, emergency medical services, training, and administration. He was appointed chief in 2014 and has an annual budget of $46 million. The chief began his 32-year-plus career with the city of Irving in January of 1986. Being a veteran of the fire department, he has served in many capacities within the suppression division. As a firefighter, he was the last to stand up and hang on while riding on the tailboard of a fire apparatus. You and me both, Chief. He has served as a high-angle rescue technician. Well, you and me both. Hazardous material technician, training officer, and paramedic since 1995, and an emergency medical dispatcher supervisor. His professional involvements, including the Dallas County Fire Chiefs Association, Texas Fire Chiefs Association, Metropolitan Fire Chiefs Association, and the International Association of Fire Chiefs. He has a Bachelor of Science degree from Columbia Southern University, Executive Fire Officer from the United States Fire Administration, Chief Fire Officer designation from the Commission on Professional Credentialing, Fire Service Chief Executive Officer designation from Texas Engineering Extension Service, University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center licensed paramedic, past Secretary Treasurer for the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, and Texas Commission on Fire Protection Certifications, Master Firefighter Level 3, Fire Officer 4, Head of Department for Suppression and Prevention, and Training Officer for the Irving Fire Department. Chief, it's a pleasure to welcome you to our show, Five Alarm Task Force.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate this opportunity to come forward and share our program that's working quite well for our city here in Irving, Texas.
That was great to hear. And when I saw it, and through a mutual friend, Steve Austin, I was interviewing Steve when I happened to see the article in Firehouse right in front of me. And I had the wrong city, but he knew you. And so he said, that's Irving, Texas. So that's what you want, Chief Conley in Irving, Texas. I read about how your department and your city actually totally came together to help avoid these accidents. Why don't you tell us a little bit of the history that happened that brought you to the point of deciding we have to make a change and this is how we'll do it?
Yeah, sure. Steve Austin invited me up to Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firemen Association conference next week, and I'm going to be sharing this idea with them. But it kind of all started in July of 2015. We had an incident up on one of our major thoroughfares where we actually went up with the policy that was implemented by the International Association of Fire Chiefs back in 2003, where we had a truck company up blocking to keep our police officers and record drivers safe. But we were on scene for over an hour, about an hour and a half, blocking so they can have a vehicle removed from the highway that had been abandoned by a intoxicated driver. So during that time frame, an 18-wheeler, fully loaded, traveling estimated 70 miles per hour, never hit his brakes and hit our truck company, had three firefighters on it. The 30-ton truck spun around 180 degrees and rolled 360 threw the three firefighters, two of them to the service road and the officer down the highway. Really should have lost all three firefighters, but fortunately we did not. And within a year's time, they all returned to work. But after this incident, a police officer blocked that scene, and then another drunk driver hit the police officer's car. So, yeah, it was multiple accidents at this one scene. And unfortunately, the driver of the 18-wheeler perished in the accident, but nobody else did, but there were several injuries. And so during this time frame, I was actually at the National Fire Academy in my second year of my executive fire officer program. And so I started looking at this incident, and over the 6 months following that, I wrote a research paper on it, exploring opportunities on how to make our first responders, record drivers, safer, and try to protect the investment that the community has in these expensive apparatus that we have on the highways.
Sure.
Yeah, so it took me 6 months, and I looked at everything from what Wisconsin's doing to Michigan, looked at the insurance agencies, how you had to have either a local ordinance or a state law to, you know, charge the driver at fault for some of this extra resources that we're putting up on the highway. The state of Texas is very conservative, and after speaking with the state fire marshal, who's under the insurance services office in Austin, Texas, he said there's really no chance of trying to get some funding from the party at fault. So I thought, well, I need to look at resources around me. How can we better utilize resources around me? And so long story short, we were selling through auction our fire apparatus that had exceeded their life expectancy through the NFPA standards. They were roughly 20 years old.
Right.
And we were getting about, on average, $4,000 a piece for these pieces of equipment. And so I thought, well, the apparatus, they already have the emergency lights and the graphics on them. All we need to do is outfit them with some arrow boards, and we can block our million-dollar pieces of equipment, add another level of protection for our first responders and record drivers, and try to make the scene safer for everybody there. Hopefully the patients has already been transported, but long story short, we implemented this program, and I'll share some details with you here in a little bit about what we've done, but that's kind of where it all started, and some of the thought process on why we want to use some of the apparatus that we already have. The expense for the city was minimal. We basically were hanging on to these apparatus for about 3 or 4 more years. They didn't have to be compliant with NFPA because they're not a first response to fire scene apparatus. They're
right.
A first response blocking. So all major accidents on our major thoroughfares, which in our city we have quite a few miles. We have about 25 miles of major thoroughfare through our city. And two of them are in the top 100 most congested in the state of Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, so we have a lot. The research paper that I did, Steve, it basically showed a 5-year period where we had 9 apparatus hit. 2 of them were totaled, one of them being the truck that I just told you about, ladder truck. The cost was well over $1 million. And some of the medical expenses for our injured firefighters still racking up on this one incident. But it cost the city over $1 million, and our apparatus combined total days out of service was over 2,000 days.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, so, you know, it just didn't make sense to spend anywhere from $700,000 to $1 million on this new apparatus and then put it out there to block and get hit and taken out of service to get parts, you know, anywhere from 30 to 180 days. And so it seemed like a simple concept. I was kind of flabbergasted that I hadn't thought of it sooner, but it all worked out well. And that's so you know, that was the reason. We had 9 of them hit. We responded to over 4,000 incidents just on our major thoroughfares over that 5-year period, where we were blocking for police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and record drivers. And it cost the city well over $1 million. So the city manager, the governing body, they were very supportive of this idea. It basically, the minimum cost is about $3,500 to outfit these, I guess, retired fire suppression engines and move them over to a blocker program. They still rotate through, Steve. We still auction them off at the end of their period as a blocker, because as we get new apparatus, that new apparatus goes to frontline. The frontline here in Irving goes to a backup status. The backup status now moves to a blocker, and then blocker goes to auction. So we just added another level in that program where we hang on to them just a few more years. So it's been successful so far.
That's the most important thing. And adding that level in an equipment line pays great dividends by allowing those apparatus now to be lifesavers for all intents and purposes by being that blocking, especially when the fact that, you know, you had such a close call with your 3 firefighters on the truck, that this is now a way not only for Irving, but now hopefully lots of your colleagues in the greater Fort Worth, Dallas area have seen this program and are emulating it for themselves. Because if you've been to the greater Dallas-Fort Worth area, you know, as far as the traffic is concerned and the interstates, you know how busy they are in that area. I've been there several times, and and all over the country, traffic is what it is today. The worst part of the traffic isn't the numbers, but I think, Chief, as you mentioned, with not only the first accident on that scene, then the second accident, is the fact of distracted drivers.
That's correct. Yeah, the drivers are getting more and more distracted all the time. The cars are getting more and more insulated. People seem to think they're bulletproof. I know there's studies, everything from the lights and the carnival impact of the lights on drivers that draw them into the vehicle. There's all sorts of stuff going on, but the bottom line is we're still getting hit.
Right.
You know, so whatever the reason is, we're still getting hit. Just as recently as Halloween night, just to kind of give you a reference, Irving is right between the city of Dallas and DFW Airport. We're on the west side of Dallas, and Dallas Fire Department had a truck company out on one of their major thoroughfares, actually got hit twice in the same night. It's a frontline piece of equipment. Last word I got was they expect it to be totaled. So Chief Coatney over in Dallas is looking to implement this program in Dallas. I know that Chief Lee over in Garland is looking to implement it, and Chief Fite down in Grand Prairie. So it's kind of, you know, starting to gain legs and catch on, and it just makes a lot of sense to protect our frontline pieces of equipment, add another level for our personnel and patients on scene. So the drivers are more and more and more, you're correct, they're more and more distracted all the time with radios, with their phones. It doesn't matter if you have a law that says you can't use a phone, people still use them. They're in a hurry, people are in a hurry these days. So there's all sorts of factors, but the bottom line, we're still getting hit. So we've got to figure out another way to protect our people out on these major thoroughfares.
Was that accident, your initial accident that you discussed, did that happen during the daytime or during the evening, Chief?
It was early in the morning, about 3:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Is when it happened. And by the time the scene was cleared up, of course, they had to shut the freeway down because the driver of the 18-wheeler had passed away in the incident. But, it was early in the morning. But I know in the DFW area, especially Irving, we got an excessive amount of major thoroughfare construction going on. There's new overpasses being built. There's, you know, changes in the normal driving pattern of these drivers, and they're not paying attention. So it's our incidents on these thoroughfares have actually increased over the last few years. They're implementing express lanes, and I'm not sure how many of your viewers have to deal with that. So you've got express lanes that may have one or two entrances, maybe an exit going through your city. Now you have to operate either in the express lane if you can get to the incident, or over the wall, and therefore it even supports a blocker program even more, because if you have to operate over the wall into the express lane because you may have a half mile backup, you can't even get to the incident unless you run it backwards.
Right.
So it's just another challenge. Our challenges keep arising. We continue to collaborate with our IPD partners in blue. Everything seems to be headed the right direction, but our challenges, as you know, in the fire service continues to be new ones popping up every day. You know, we started out suppression, went to hazmat, you got, you know, all sorts of challenges, you know, technical rescue. And we seem, as a profession, seem to step up and try to fill that gap for our citizens across the United States. Whatever the need is, we try to fill that gap and serve them. So,
now, those are the great words of our late great mentor, Chief Bruno, is that our job is to take care of Mrs. Smith on her worst possible day, whatever her problem is.
That's right. We don't disqualify with our qualification. That's another big quote from Chief Brunicini, is, you know, they're having a bad day, and you're there to help them. So some of the other things I was looking at as I did my research, Steve, was, you know, record driver response. Here in Irving, we track in the contract. We put in the contract we want a record driver on scene within 20 minutes, and so we track that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect we put in the contract is if it's a minor incident, meaning nobody is injured when we get there, rather than exposing our first responders and the record driver out on the major thoroughfare, we require them to remove the vehicle to a parking lot off the service road. If there's multiple, they remove them quickly and stage them, and then they start hauling the wrecked vehicles from the scene, from a parking lot, so
right.
We get off the major. So those are aspects we included in the contract when we went out and hired a record company for our city.
Oh, that's an interesting prospect, because most departments just have a group of phone numbers listed, and whoever, you know, they call down the list through dispatching, whoever is available is the one who shows up. But having a contracted company and having terms that they have to meet and tracking those, I think brings another level, first of all, professionalism to it. So you know that you're going to have somebody there within the time period, unless, God forbid, there's some sort of emergency, but you're going to have somebody there and they know what's expected of them, on the scene and off the scene if necessary, as you just said, with moving the non-emergency. And I think that, you know, having had to stand on I-40 in the middle of the Piedmont of Greensboro, Guilford County, when I was a early firefighter, I knew what it was like back then with four lanes of traffic in each direction. And it's just gotten much worse, you know, since then. That was 40 years ago. And in all this time, it has grown exponentially. And I think maybe part of the problem is that our communities and engineers are looking to create more, we'll use a common fire term, flow path for the automobiles and trucks that are coming through our communities. But the question is, are they also preparing for the eventualities of what can happen with all this traffic on these new highways and byways that they're creating and increasing? And do we have the infrastructure that can actually support it in the event of an emergency and support it safely for them? The rescuers have to be safe so they don't have to be rescued themselves.
That's correct. That's very appropriate. You know, the state of Texas, part of a basic firefighter certification is traffic incident management. And I know that the Cumberland Valley Volunteer played a significant role in getting that policy implemented across the United States, but the state here in Texas, we're now requiring within that certification the basic firefighter for them to take the traffic incident management course. And that just shows how significant learning to operate in this dangerous environment is. And it's, as you say, and it's true, it's proven to be true, it's getting more and more dangerous all the time on these thoroughfares. So when we look at a problem, and when I looked at this particular problem, I wanted to look at it from A to Z, and that's why I included wreckers in the solution to help protect them. You know, it's law here in the state of Texas, and I'm sure several others, that if it's a minor, you're supposed to get off the thoroughfare to exchange your information. A lot of these drivers don't know that, but sometimes it's with all the protection on our vehicles, fortunately, the people aren't getting hurt as bad as they did 30 years ago, but the vehicles are unable to be moved. So it can still be a minor incident, but they can't move them off the thoroughfare. And that's why we wanted the wrecker drivers. We include them in on our training. We include them in on our collaboration with the police department. So everybody's on board with what we need to do. And then the next level that we're kind of all getting on board with is the traffic incident management course that's offered through our local council of government. So it's a big problem. I think everybody realizes it. But the blockers that we've implemented here in the city of Irving have been at a minimal cost. It's already proven to protect. You know, we bought two brand new tillers just like 2 years ago that cost us right at $1.3 million. And we've already had one of our blockers hit, which the tiller would have been hit. And so they've proven to be successful. Some of the other issues, if you want to talk about it more when we come back from a break,
sure.
We can talk about how we implemented it. You know, a lot of departments don't know that. They're like, yeah, that's a great idea, but how do we implement it? How do we get it out on scene? Because our city is not going to hire additional firefighters to drive a blocker. So I can share with you what we've done.
All right, that sounds great, Chief. All right, so folks, we'll be right back with Chief Victor Conley of the Irving, Texas Fire Department right after these words. So please stay tuned. The tones sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on. You're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on. No matter where we live or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? No water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief, wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your Cool Towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your Cool Towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your cool towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool.
It's Thursday night and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. News and issues for today's first responders, and our guest today is Chief Victor Conley of the Irving, Texas Fire Department. And we're talking about the issue of blocking when there is an emergency scene on active highways, roadways, byways, because there have been very high tolls of first responders of all levels, firefighters, police officers, EMS people, even the recovery people, the tow truck drivers, have all been injured and or killed by distracted drivers, drivers under DUI, whatever, on the scene of these type of accidents. And we've got to help do something, put a stop to it. So Chief Conley and his department and his community came together and started using a piece of apparatus that was getting ready to be auctioned off. It didn't have to meet the NFPA standards because it was no longer responding to fire issues or emergency issues. So now in this segment, we're going to talk about how, after they have the idea, how they went through the implementation. So Chief, if you please.
Yes, sir, Steve. Thank you. The implementation process, it was a challenge at first. Like any new program, sometimes you got to get the wheels turning before you get the bugs worked out. But a few things we've done here in the city of Irving is my original concept. When I rolled the program out, I had to get my governing body support on outfitting the apparatus and hanging on to them, because, as you know, the longer you hang on to a piece of equipment, you know, these were close to 20 years of age. Maintenance gets to be a higher cost to the city, so that's always something to be considered. But
sure.
My governing body, the first thing they asked me when I ran this idea by them was, are you going to ask for additional staffing to staff these blocker apparatus? They liked the idea. They just wanted to know the bottom line, right, the cost.
Always the bottom line.
Always the bottom line. And so I told them I would not be asking for additional staffing for these apparatus. And the way we rolled it out here in the city of Irving, just to give you an idea, the majority of our apparatus are minimum staff with three firefighters, usually an officer, driver, and a firefighter. And so what we've done, of course, our tiller truck's got two drivers, so we have four on those two pieces of equipment. But so the way we rolled it out here in the city of Irving was we tied the blocker to a truck company. And so each one of our stations, we started this, we finally got past the, you know, the discussion phase and the funding phase and updating them and getting our boards on. So last fall, we rolled out our first two blockers at our two tiller stations. And since then, we've had two more blockers put in service at two of our straight ladder companies, and we've got one more to put in service and should be in place by January. So all five of our truck companies will have a blocker tied to them. And what I mean by that is, if there is a major accident on a major thoroughfare, the firefighter on the truck company drives the blocker to the scene. And once on scene, they set the blocker up Of course, the 45-degree angle and all that, that's in the policy that was implemented by the International Association of Fire Chiefs back in 2003, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's the same, except you're adding another level. So your truck company is in the shadow of the blocker that you're setting up. So once that firefighter sets the blocker up, if it's not safe to set cones, we don't require them to set it. I don't want to put my firefighters on the backside of a blocker setting up cones if it's dangerous. So I told them that's kind of a judgment call of the officer on scene. So they set the blocker, turn the lights on, turn the air boards on to give the drivers an indication it's time to start moving over. And then they leave the apparatus and go get in the truck company until the scene is time to clear the scene. So if the blocker's hit, nobody is in the blocker. And that was a high priority for this program. So the implementation phase was to tie it to the blocker. The firefighter on the truck company responds in the blocker and follows the truck company. Now, if it's out of their district, they respond code one to set the blocker up. Meaning if another blocker is out on a different incident and the second blocker is called, we don't respond with lights and sirens. We have an engine company blocking there until they arrive on scene. I don't want our people running across the city with lights and sirens endangering other drivers. So
sure.
That's kind of this brief explanation of how we implemented the program. Now, a few things we've done since then, Steve, is from time to time we have firefighters on light duty or modified duty mm-hmm. or on-duty injury, and they have limitations. And so
right. In
the past we would, you know, basically give them office work to do, and a lot of time it was just filler. So what we've done is we've started signing some of our modified duty out in the field on the blocker, so it frees up the firefighter to remain on the truck company, because these individuals have limitations to come and work light duty. So we make sure the officer at the station where the blockers are signed knows the limitations. And then if we have multiple people on modified duty, we may assign a shift, morning shift on a truck blocker, and then an evening to cover the 5 o'clock traffic. So that's some of the things that we've kind of tweaked along the way as well to get staffing to drive the apparatus to the scene of these major thoroughfares. Now the blockers go with them, whether they go to training or do inspection. Anytime that truck company leaves the house, the blocker's following them. And then, like I mentioned earlier, Steve, when we get a new piece of equipment and that new piece of equipment goes, or the old equipment goes to a backup roll. Remember when I talked
right.
about that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so if for some reason a blocker, let's just say a blocker, you know, breaks down for mechanical reasons, what we do is we go get the oldest backup fire apparatus that wouldn't have been going to auction once a new piece of equipment comes in, and it's now a backup to the blocker.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Sure.
So we will always have a blocker out there. Even if our designated ones break down, we will use an old backup apparatus rather than exposing our new apparatus out on these major thoroughfares. So it's, like I said, sometimes you got to get an idea in motion before you can tweak it and make it work for your community. And that's how we implemented the program here.
How far?
Like I said.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, please continue.
Well, I was just going to say, and that's, you know, that was kind of the obstacle some of the local municipality fire departments were having is how do we implement this? We can't get additional staffing. And so once I shared what we were doing with them, it made sense. And so they started implementing the program as well.
Well, that's good. If I may, how far away is the blocking vehicle parked from the actual scene?
You know, it all depends upon the topography, you know. I mean, if it's over a hill, we park it up on the hill. If it's just flat, we usually park it about 200 to 300 feet behind the truck company. Put the truck company in. We tell our police officers they need to park in the shadows. You know, it's kind of new ideas, right? So we rolled this program out, and a neighboring municipality law enforcement officer came and parked his vehicle behind the blocker, exposing their vehicle instead of our blocker. Sure enough, it got hit. That was just recently.
Oh, wow.
So they learned a valuable lesson, you know, get in the shadow. That's where the protection's at.
Sure.
That's where our hot zone's at, and that's where we're treating patients and all that. So, yeah, we space it out about 200 to 300 feet, and like I said, topography dictates, you know, sometimes, you know, if it's road construction, a hill, a curve, you know, whatever. So may change that. And we leave that up to the officer on scene, incident commander, to set it where he feels appropriate.
I think another real strong positive of this program is the fact that since the blocker is only used to block, it's not carrying any additional equipment that anybody might need, you're not going to have any of your firefighters walking back to that truck to access any tools or cribbing or anything like that. Once that piece of apparatus is parked and blocking, that's its sole duty, and all your personnel can remain up at the scene, and that's going to keep them, again, in a safer position overall, because they're not coming back up, and they're not coming into the shadow unless it's finally close the scene off and go home.
That's correct. The only thing we do keep on our blockers, Steve, is we keep the absorbent. We keep extra absorbent on there. We keep extra flares. Of course, we have cones, brooms, shovel, that kind of stuff, if we need to clean up at the scene, and our apparatus that's in the shadow runs out of some of those supplies.
Sure.
And police officers, they have the ability to, you know, if they want to set some flares and all that, they have that capability there as well. Because, you know, a lot of times, if it's not a major accident and we're not needed, we will deploy the blocker and set it for the police officers to do their investigation. And if it's going to take, you know, more than 30 minutes, we'll have our frontline piece of equipment clear and leave the blocker on scene and then come back and pick it up when they're through with it. So we're exercising that opportunity with our police officers as well.
Well, you just answered a question I was about to ask, was if you're going to leave it there, is the driver remaining with it? And you answer that by saying no. He's going to go ahead with his company, his or her company, go back to their station, and then once the police officer says that they're clearing the scene, someone will be brought back out to pick up the blocker and return it to its station.
Yeah, that's correct. The only time we would leave a driver with that blocker would be, like I said, if they were on modified duty and that was their only responsibility, was to operate the blocker. So
right,
that'd be the only.
All right. Well, this is great, Chief, and I think maybe we can close it off this morning with some of your recommendations. Since you have so many different types of municipalities in your area, you have real big urban areas in Dallas and Fort Worth, you have the suburban areas of where you are in Irving, and then you even have some more suburban and rural areas. So what would be some of your recommendations to your colleagues across the country in looking to start up this program?
Yes, so some of my recommendations would be, first of all, and this is what we did here in Irving, first of all, we got in touch with the authority having jurisdiction over the major thoroughfare. You know, here in our city, that was three different entities. One was a tollway, one was our, you know, Texas Department of Transportation, and one was a different tollway authority. So the first thing we would do when we received a call for an incident on the highway, whether it was major or minor, when we received the call in dispatch, we would notify that entity that we needed help with blocking and notifying the drivers that they needed to move over. So that didn't work out real well, but it did work out some. But that would be one recommendation, is to work with your entities that are in charge of these major thoroughfares.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you can do is you can, like I said, you can look at your equipment that's, you know, you're auctioning off and weigh your, you know, your risk and reward of hanging on to it a few more years. And I'm more than happy to share any of our information with any of your viewers, from our policy to the equipment we put on these blocking apparatus. And it may be that it may take a while. It may take a while before they get to the point where they'll have a piece of equipment. Or maybe if they pull enough money together, they can go to an auction where some of these vehicles have been auctioned off, and You know, you might be able to pick one up for $2,000 or $3,000, and you've already got the lights and graphics on it, which is a savings. So, you know, I'd recommend doing that. I'd recommend also looking at, if you don't have a contract for a record service, to possibly implement and look at one and put some of those binders in there that require them to be on scene within X amount of time. For here, it's 20 minutes. Also require them to get the vehicles off the major thoroughfare so you're not exposing your first responders for too long a time.
Right.
Yeah, that's another aspect I would look at. So there's several things. Just look at the resources you have available at your fingertips and see how you can implement a program. I know that, you know, in Michigan, I think it's Grand Rapids, they got dump trucks from their, I think their water department. So there's all sorts of opportunities close by that have a reduced impact to your city's finances that, you know, they can be utilized other than exposing our brand new first line apparatus out on the thoroughfares. Like I said, we can add another ring of protection for our responders. So that's some of my short recommendations and to offer up any help to any of your viewers that would like to reach out to me.
Chief, what is your email in case they do want to reach out to you, please?
Yeah, my email is vconley, it's V-C-O-N-L-E-Y, at thecityofirving.org. And Irving is spelled I-R-V-I-N-G. Make sure you put a G on the end of it.
Right, and .org, not .com. Well, Chief Connelly, thank you very much for your time this morning. I know it's a busy department. We've worked hard to put this schedule together so that we could share this information with our listeners. We wish you much success at your presentation at Cumberland Valley Volunteer Firefighters Association and the wonderful work they do to try to keep all our first responders safe as well. And our mutual friend, Steve Austin, who has dedicated his life to keeping first responders safe. So, Chief, thank you very, very much. We really appreciate your time today.
And thank you, Steve. I've enjoyed this time we've spent together, and I hope something we've said will help some of your viewers, because we're all in this together, and we need to learn to help each other all we can and not operate independently. So thank you, sir.
Very good. Thank you very much. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words.
You are listening to 5 Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
That SCBA is really a pain, right? Strap it on, then the mask. Jeez, plenty of guys used to fight fire without them. Why can't I? Well, meet my little friends. Arsenic, asbestos, benzene, benzopyrene, diesel exhaust, formaldehyde, polychlorinated biphenyls, polychlorinated dibenzopidioxins, vinyl chloride, 1,3 butadiene, and chronic hepatitis B and C virus. That's right. When you don't wear your full PPE, including your SCBA, you're inviting these little buggers into your innermost parts. They bring multiple cancers, including kidney, liver, prostate, testicular, and lung, plus multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia, and much more. And if you don't decon, where you go, they go. Hey, honey, better set the table. I'm bringing some friends home for dinner with you and the kids. Smarten up. Wear your full PPE and SCBA. For you and for them. Hi, this is Steve Green. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Five Alarm Task Force with Chief Victor Conley talking about the issue of safety blocking, or blocking safety, whichever way you want to look at it. But there it is. We must do a better job working within our department, with our co-workers in EMS and law enforcement, and even with our other departments in our communities, to set up a safety blocking program for emergencies that occur on active roadways and highways. Now, sure, in many districts you have small towns, small streets, neighborhood streets, but that doesn't necessarily protect you from a distracted driver. Let's be honest, just as Chief Conley said, distracted drivers are a plague in our country today, both by actions that they do, and by the fact of the way our vehicles are manufactured today. But the fact is, we have lost too many of our first responders and our recovery people due to distracted drivers. And if you heard one of the things that Chief Conley said, they had left their blocker at the scene of a non-emergency accident. The police officer came up and parked his car behind the blocking engine. And what happened? The police car was hit. The lesson is, set up a safe blocking program. Work together in your community to put it together, just like Chief Conley spoke about. If you don't have, for example, an old engine or an old ladder truck that can be used, talk with your public utilities department. Maybe they have a water truck or a snowplow or something else that's big enough to take a hit, that could be parked and respond on the highway and take a hit, God forbid, that would protect all the emergency workers down the line. This is something that we have to do. This is something, it's one of those few things that we can do to help prevent injury and death on the scene of the emergencies we respond to. A lot of times, and even part of this, we have no control that we can exude. But in this case, we do. We can plan, and we can put that plan into action and do as best a blocking program as possible. It's no guarantee. We know that. But at least if we don't have anybody in that blocking vehicle when it's hit, there's less of a chance of injury and death to those in the shadow zone. So think about it. Take this podcast, please, back to your chiefs, back to your commissioners, whoever you need to, and tell them this is what we need to do, and you can figure out a way to man the blocker. I'm sure that they're, just as Chief Conley said, they used one of the people from the active truck company, or they used people who were on light duty but could still drive. So you'll find a way if you decide to put your heads together and make this happen. And let's reduce the number of line of duty deaths to first responders and recovery workers that occur when we go out there to help other people on emergencies, on highways, and active roadways. Let's do our best and stay safe. And that's my view.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We would like to thank our guest, Chief Victor Conley of the Irving, Texas Fire Department, for joining us to discuss his new blocking program to protect the scene and personnel when there are emergencies on active roadways. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast streaming services? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at @cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod or /dalmatprodfire. And stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog at our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.